Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
Drama on One is offered as a podcast at rte.ie/drama on one and of course here on RTE Radio 1 on Sunday nights. Tonight on Drama on One, Helen Wheels by Fionn Foley. A chance discovery leads to a night on the wrong side of the law in a comic tale of narcotics, fast food delivery and a mother's love for her son. And just to note that the programme does contain some strong language along the way. Starring Kerry Quinn as Helen, with Cillian Lenehan, James Murphy, Niamh McAllister, Jared McCabe and Charlie Bonner. This is Helen Wheels by Fionn Foley, directed by Conall Morrison.
Sure, last Christmas I'd hardly heard of the damn thing.
The novel coronavirus has spread from the Wuhan region to most of the country.
I don't remember paying it any mind. We were always hearing about that type of thing halfway across the world. Never made a blame bit of difference over here.
Experts are saying the spread of the virus could reach global pandemic levels.
And by God, a woman of my generation? In Belfast? I can promise you, I've seen a lot worse in my time in my own back garden. I'm tougher than any virus. But I think there came a certain point when we all knew. This was bloody serious.
We regret to announce that Emmerdale will be postponed indefinitely.
Fuck! Myself and my son Lorcan live in a small house on the Glen Road. Just the two of us, since his dad passed away a few years before. Lorcan was 19 now, and although we got on well from day to day, we'd never been... How would you put it? We'd never been terribly close, I suppose. So, when this COVID-19 business kicked off, I'll admit, I was looking forward to spending a wee bit more time with him, you know, in the house and that. Lorcan's college had been cancelled for the rest of the year. And apart from the few hours a week he spent at his part-time job, I could expect to see a lot more of him over the next few months. We'd go on walks together, do the Sunday Times crossword, maybe even an old jigsaw where we're feeling ambitious. Oh, I was well pleased with myself, I'll admit. Then Lorcan arrived in one morning, smelling a drink.
Lorcan,
I says,
are you snattered?
Or is that just hand sanitizer I'm smelling off you? A pang of guilt shot through his face. Like that look you get from a dog when they're mid-shite.
Aye, ma, just put on some this second.
He swallowed deeply. Terror filled his bloodshot eyes.
Well, if that's the case, could you get away from the Yankee Candle before you go up like a bonfire?
He threw his hands up in frustration. Never a good liar, our Lorcan.
All right, ma, I was out in the pish, okay? Can I not have a few pints with everything that's going on? Cavanagh's is the only place still allowed to open.
I don't care what that spoon in Downing Street says, Lorcan. In this house, the only law is cop on.
Aye, I know, ma.
Well, you better get comfortable here, so.
What do you mean?
Because that's you self-isolating here at home for 2 weeks, Lorcan. Do you hear me? You're not leaving until we can be sure you don't have the COVID.
Are you having a laugh? Ma, I can't stay here for 2 fucking weeks.
Language!
I can't!
Why not?
I have a job, for starters.
Lorcan drove a bike for Speedy Eats a few times a week. You know the ones I mean. Lads going from takeaway to takeaway in big turquoise jackets. Not the most stable of jobs, but it was getting him through college.
Lorcan, love. There's not a single person this side of Belfast looking for a side of coronavirus with their sag pannier. You may tell Mr. Speedy Eats that you're self-isolating. I'm sure they'll manage without you. Ma, if I don't show up for work, there will be serious consequences.
Consequences? Oh, I'm sorry, Lorcan. I didn't realise you'd started performing open-heart surgery during the week. How wonderful.
You don't understand, Ma.
I understand perfectly well, Lorcan. You made your choice, so you may accept the consequences. Now go and wash your filthy hands before you send your wee Maddie an early grave.
Not early enough!
So, the mother-son bonding hadn't got off to a great start. I did feel bad for Lorcan, but he had to catch himself on. He was just like his da, a martyr for work, wherever he could find it. It was going to be hard for him to stay put for the next while. Christ. Now, we'd work it out, the two of us. We always did. Come 9 o'clock, he'd be down again and we'd have dinner and watch telly. There'd be a mumbled apology of sorts, which I'd accept without giving too much thought to whether it had been motivated by guilt or hunger. Ours was a funny relationship, truth be told. There was no argument too big that couldn't be resolved by an hour or two of us verbally abusing MasterChef contestants of a weekday evening. Oh, aye. We'd be fine. As I was sweeping the kitchen floor, I spotted his big ugly Speedy Eats bag in the corner. Saints preserve us, it looked like a postbox for a bouncy castle. It's a wonder he hadn't got scoliosis from carrying it around on his back, and the state of it, covered in muck and grime. No son of mine was going to be seen with that filthy thing. I'd give it a wee wash in the sink. As I picked it off the ground, I noticed it was heavier than expected. Ooh, he'd hardly a few leftovers in there. I unzipped the lumpy Dayglow box, secretly hoping for an orphaned pad thai or even a wee bag of spring rolls. Instead, what I saw was a large pile of tightly packed green leafy things. At first, I thought they might be garnishes from some of the fancier restaurants. But after I took a whiff of one of them, I was taken right back to the Stiff Little Fingers concert at the Ulster Hall all those years ago. The musty herbal aroma was unmistakable. Jesus Christ, my Lorcan's dealing drugs. Could this be happening? How had my wee son been led so astray? What kind of mother could have let this happen under her own roof? Oh God. I never thought we'd drifted this far apart. That whatever he was going through in his daft little head had led him to this. Narcotics. My son was a peddler. A dope fiend. A potrepreneur? I wanted to storm up into his room and shake him like a rag doll, shake the badness out of his naive little head. Oh, Christ. If his dad could see him now. Something vibrated underneath the bags. So I reached in and pulled out a small mobile phone. It had 14 unread text messages. Now, it wasn't like me to go sticking my nose in where it didn't belong, but I felt I had to make sense of what I had found. As I frantically scanned through the messages in Lorcan's inbox, I realised they were all from loyal customers. Oh aye, each one of them looking their fix. I felt the blood drain from my face as I resisted the urge to fling the phone against the kitchen wall. I wanted to reply to each one of them. Ye, stay away from my son. You depraved little bastards. But then I thought, if these anonymous numbers were paying my son for his services, who was my son paying? And what would they do if their product wasn't shifted? Oh, sweet Jesus, my Lorcan could be at the business end of a cartel food chain that'd have him killed off far quicker than any pandemic. Whew. I couldn't confront him about it. Then he'd be gone. He'd never come home again. But I couldn't just leave it in the house. Lying there on the kitchen floor. What if the cat got into it? There was only one thing for it. Lorcan! I'm heading out for a wee bit, love. Don't wait up. And I'm borrowing your bike. Woo-hoo! Oh, my horse is coming. You broke the ball, right, Jeff? Cycle in! No. Aye. I know what you're thinking. I was losing my mind. But look, I didn't want Lorcan to get into trouble with whoever had him brainwashed. And if that meant shifting a few bags of weed myself, it was a small price to pay for his safety. I had the system figured out fairly quickly, like. I'd get a text with an address and an amount. We'd agree a price for the deal, and I'd pedal as fast as my wee legs would let me. It's really quite easy. Once I'd showed up at the house, some young lad would peer cautiously round the door with a fistful of cash. He'd be so taken aback by seeing a 48-year-old Belfast woman that the transaction would be extremely brief. Hello there. How's it about ye? Order for some Thai green curry and naan bread?
Yes, I think so. Hey, are you not Lorcan Devon's ma?
Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. That really depends on what you think you saw, doesn't it, young lad?
I suppose so.
Good man. Now, are we here to do business or what?
Yes, Miss Devlin.
Aye. Thought so. That'll be £100 when you're ready, mucker.
I thought we agreed 50.
Aye. That's right, young Jimmy McConville. But you see, I know your ma works up in Specsavers in Victoria Square, so I'm thinking we'll call it 100 this time. What says you?
Aye. 100'll do fine.
That's a good lad. And don't you ever text this number again. Or I might just need to get my eyes checked in town. Do we understand each other, Jimmy?
We do, aye, Mrs. Devlin.
Now, I took no pleasure in intimidating young lads and swindling them out of their money. I would do what I had to do in order to save my son's hide. But I'd be damned if he was going to have any returning customers by the end of it. I would be the meanest dealer this side of the Laggan. Mark my words. These kids would see my face in their nightmares. Every time they had a spliff before bed. Every time they blasted Bob Marley from their bedrooms. Oh aye. The Jimmy McConvilles of this world would have the worst trip of their young lives if they so much as texted my Lorcan again. So aye. Maybe I did take a wee bit of pleasure in it. Within an hour, I had made it from the Crumlin Road over to Dunkern Gardens and through Ormo Park. I was on fire! Whizzing from house to house under the cover of darkness. I knocked out three orders on the same road. Large pizza with jalapenos and pineapple. Mazamon curry with extra greens. Here's your weed ball bag. Shite. I mean, chicken wings with extra dip. And promptly drew a line under each business relationship. It's never happened, all right, big lad? You and I never met, muchacho. Comprende? Text this number again, I'll have your kneecaps. The serotonin rush of the last few hours had gone straight to my head. I sped down the Falls Road like an Olympic cyclist. This must be how Lance Armstrong felt when he cycled around town with a bag of drugs. I felt unstoppable. And what's more, I'd made over £500 in under 2 hours, which, of course, would be going straight towards St. Vincent de Paul once it reopened. And I knew well that if I so much as repotted my window boxes, Joyce from number 12 would have the PSNI Criminal Assets Division all over me. So deciding I'd done enough to get ahead of any trouble that might result from Lorcan's time off, I turned the wee burner phone on silent. And I went to throw it into the Speedy Eats bag. When I looked in, I noticed there was just one lonely wee tuft of green left. Too small to sell, I thought. I'd be raised not to waste anything, no matter how small. Not that tonight was the night for moralising, but feck it, I deserved it, didn't it? And at least this way, I could be sure that my product was of decent quality. I put together an improvised cigarette using a Sainsbury's receipt and the corner of my organ donor card, and I sprinkled a wee bit of the green foliage into it. Shade at no light. I stuck out my free hand and hailed down what looked like a passing taxi. A young woman shouted at me from inside the car as she winded her window down.
All right, you on for the night too?
She had several greasy brown bags beside her in the passenger seat.
Me? Ah, yeah. Doing the late shift again, take away never sleeps, it seems.
Fair play. I'm in it for the long haul too. While the kids are still asleep, you know. You gotta make the most of every minute now the schools are out, aren't
they? Aye.
I replied, a bit taken aback by the woman's positivity. She looked tired.
Ugh.
She looked shagged, to be honest.
You're a good ma, doing what you're doing,
she said as she restarted her engine. She had no idea how right she was.
Is it a light you're looking for?
Sorry, what's that?
I said, still a bit stunned by the encounter. The woman nodded at my makeshift doobie.
Oh, why, yes, please, if you have one.
I replied, hoping she mistook the thing in my hand for a cigarette.
If anyone asks, you're Bill Clinton,
she said, reaching over to hand me the lighter.
Bill Clinton?
Aye, you never inhaled.
Aye, Bill Clinton indeed. That lad got away with a lot more than I ever did, I can tell you.
She pulled her window up and drove away into the darkness. I took stock for a moment and watched the city move around me. I looked at my newly acquired blue Zippo lighter, a gift from this passing stranger. The street was a promenade of light in an otherwise dark night sky. I stared for a moment at the yellow glow of 100 little lights from 100 little homes, and within many, if not most of them, a mother trying to make ends meet. It struck me that the whole of Belfast was full of women like the girl I just met. Women making sacrifices, breaking their backs for those they loved. I eyed my lonely makeshift spliff. Yeah, this was for them, I thought. A toast of sorts. One or two puffs was enough. And then I was away. And I really was away. Strong. It took a few minutes, but once I started pedaling again, I felt great. The same way I had felt back in the Ulster Hall watching the stiff little fingers ripping the place apart. Oh. And seeing Mike, Lorcan's dad, for the first time across the hall, ergotaring like there was something clinically wrong with him. I'd never seen a man with such audacity, such energy, like a wee ginger John Hume. I'd caught his eye in between guitar solos, and he had strutted across the hall with all the reckless confidence of a hurler on the Shankill Road. He asked if he could buy me a drink. I remember I told him mine was a double vodka and tonic. And he tried to hide the panic on his face when he realised that that cost more than a pint of harp. I knew when he handed the barman a crumpled fiver that was the last few quid he had to his name. But he turned to me, smiled and said, Helen Devlin, you've made a happy man very old. I snorted vodka out my nose. Well, she'd have mortified me, but somehow it didn't. I never felt embarrassed around Mike, not once. I felt every sensory second of that night come crashing back as I clutched onto the handlebars of Lorcan's bike for dear life. The warm summer wind blew through my hair as I shot like a rocket down the hills towards home. I was alive. I was infinite. I was... I was starting to feel a wee bit queasy. Ugh. There were beads of sweat starting to form under my bicycle helmet. And it was hard to focus on the road. My insides felt too warm and my outsides were freezing. I'd only had a wee drag, but the stuff was a lot stronger than I'd remembered. How did people smoke this on a regular basis? Whew. I did my best to keep my eyes on the road and not fall over, but I was was losing control. I was starting to hallucinate. My knees were mocking me, hopping up and down like bad-tempered whack-a-moles.
Oh, you've done it now, Helen.
They sneered.
You're in a right mess now. You'll be lucky if you ever get off that peg alive.
Leave me alone, I cried back at my knees. I'm doing this for Lorcan. I'm trying to help my son, don't you understand? He's after getting caught up in the drugs.
Oh, my. Right lot of good it'll do him to see his ma flattened on the main road with a bag of weed on her back. You should be ashamed of yourself, Helen.
I needed to ignore my knees. They didn't care. They never do. Paranoia had well and truly taken hold. For a while, it seemed the only thing keeping me balanced was knowing that if I stopped pedaling, I would definitely die. Time passed at an agonizingly slow rate. I felt empires rise and fall, entire solar systems explode into oblivion, all inside my own mind, like. I looked down at my watch. It had only been around 5 minutes since things started to turn south. I pedaled and pedaled, hoping each corner I turned on the road would take me closer to my right mind. As if things weren't bad enough, I now felt the irrepressible urge to pee. I must have blocked it out until then, because all of a sudden, my ability to hold it in was non-existent. I had to go, and it did not matter in the slightest where. Then, as if by some divine intervention, I spotted something familiar. Vincenzo's chipper. Oh, thank God. He'd let me use his bathroom. I leapt off the bike while it was still in motion and trundled towards the chipper like a deranged mountaineer arriving at the summit. I had to be discreet. I couldn't afford to be intercepted by conversation. Not while I was half-baked, disorientated and sweating urine. I stealthily approached the glass facade of Vincenzo's like a moth to a halogen bulb. I needed to get from the door to the bathroom in one slick, unobserved movement. I spotted Vincenzo and waited for him to turn around to the fryer. Then I pounced. Fuck. Ow. The door was closed. I scuttled out of sight like a wounded animal before Vincenzo could see who had sullied his immaculate glass door. Under normal circumstances, I might have given up. But my desperation to pee was propelling me to the almost certainly disgusting seat of Vincenzo's bathroom. My second attempt was more successful. I was locked inside the cubicle before the door had shut after me. Oh, finally, I had a moment to breathe. To come back down to reality. Maybe it was the brief meeting of my skull and the double-glazed chipper door, but sobriety was starting to feel within my grasp. I had survived. Thank God. Oh. It was time to go home. I threw some water over my beetroot red face and prepared myself to rejoin the outside world. The chipper was empty. Perfect. I went to make my getaway. I mean, truth be told, even if it had been full of my immediate relatives, the night's events had taken such a toll on me, they'd have never recognised the spectre emerging from the toilets.
Ach, Helen Devlin, to what do I owe the pleasure?
Ah, oh, bollocks. Ach, Vincenzo, it's good to see you. I hope you don't mind, I was just using your...
So you're a Speedy Eats raider now? Bravo, Helen. Bravo! These are crazy times, kid. But it's innovators like you that will get us through.
I cursed the lumpy cube on my back. I couldn't tell Vincenzo the truth. I mean, what was I supposed to say? I can know, Vincenzo. I'm just making a few pound on the side until all this blows over. Sure, you know yourself. Right, well, I better be heading.
Excellent. Well, then, if you could bring us fish supper to 35 Tower Street, that would be... Chef's kiss, as the men say.
Oh, Christ, no. Yes, of course. Of course, Vincenzo, no problem.
No problem, right? See you later on your bike.
You got me.
So much for the lack of career opportunities for the over 45s, eh? I'd become a drug dealer and fish supper chauffeur in one evening. My high had thoroughly mellowed and Tar Street was on my way home. So I said I'd drop off the wee fish supper en route. No sense in ruining someone's night. I cycled along the street and spotted the small terraced house, number 35. I watched through the fogged glass as a wee figure tottered towards the pale brown door. Behind it was a wee old man. Certainly the far side of 80. Hello, is the fish supper for yourself?
It is, aye. What's the damage?
That don't worry. You can get me next time, sure.
As if I could ever consider repeating the night's events again.
Fuck, you're a kind wee girlie.
He replied.
You'll share it with me, so.
What's that?
You'll share a few of the chips with me. I'm just after sticking on Midsummer Murders. They've gone and postponed Emmerdale.
I know. Shocking.
Shocking is right. So you'll join me?
Now, I was experiencing what I've heard is called the munchies. Every fibre of my weary body wanted to tear that wee brown bag apart and inhale its contents. Even if it meant sitting in this wee man's living room watching Midsummer Murders. I thought better of it. You're a kind man, but I'd better not, for the COVID, aye?
Oh, that's right. We've to look after ourselves and each other. Aye.
Aye. Look, I was nearly sorry I didn't have a little bit of weed left to tide him over. But here, given the number it had done on me, I didn't want manslaughter on my conscience as well as everything else. As I pedalled wearily back home, I thought about the poor wee man. How he'd be all alone in that house for God knows how long. And I thought, Christ, maybe what my wee Lorcan had been doing wasn't so bad. Giving people some kind of escape from the mundanity of it all. The tedium, the loneliness, especially the loneliness. It's not always easy to know what's right and wrong, particularly these days. Sometimes you just have to act on impulse and hope that whatever your body is willing you to do might ultimately take you in the right direction. That's all any of us can hope for, really, isn't it? That's not what I would want for him, but maybe our Lorcan had some greater plan in his head when he agreed to do what he did. Maybe it's not for me to understand it. After all, he was a gooby lad at heart. Always looking out for others, he was. So who knows? Maybe he had it all figured out. I mean, I was still going to fucking murder him. I collapsed in the front door, almost too tired to stay upright. That's until I saw he was waiting for me. Standing there in my kitchen was Lorcan, two police officers, and a fourth stranger. A young man about Lorcan's age wearing a speedy H jacket and bicycle helmet.
Mrs. Devlin?
Aye. How's about ye?
We've just been speaking to your son. We understand he's an employee of Speedy Eats.
Then I completely lost it.
Oh, Jesus, officer. He is, I. But he is the sweetest wee lad you'll ever meet, and he means well. He's just after getting caught up with the wrong crowd. Please. Oh, God, please. Don't take him away from me, officers. He'll never survive in prison. He can't even fry a fucking egg.
Not the best testimony I'd ever given, but it came from the heart. The officer looked puzzled.
Thank you for that, Mrs. Devlin. But your son's conduct, it's not in question here. This other young man beside me, he's accused of dealing cannabis under the guise of being a member of Speedy Eats staff. We've spent the last while tracking his movements on CCTV.
The second police officer checked her notepad, and the young man's eyes sank to the ground.
At approximately 8:15 last night, your son went to pick up an order at Burrito Bar Restaurant on Botanic Avenue, where the accused had also arranged to meet one of his clientele. It appears that both men set down their delivery bags at a similar time and mistakenly took each other's orders, as it were.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
That is most unfortunate, officer. Most unfortunate news.
Well, we have it all sorted now. We're sorry to have troubled you so late at night. This young man on my left will be coming to the station. And your son's cooperation with us this evening has been greatly appreciated. We took a statement just before you arrived, so all that remains is to impound the Speedy Eats bag that your son mistakenly acquired. That's not it on your back, is it, Mrs. Devlin?
My entire body froze. Lorcan stared at me, as confused as a goat on AstroTurf.
Yes, officer, this is actually the bag, yeah. I thought Lorcan had gone out to work without his gear. I mean, his stuff, I mean, fuck, his uniform and that. So I said I'd cycle him to him.
I could tell the story didn't make complete sense to anyone in the room, particularly wee Lorcan.
What the fuck?
But the night had been long enough for the officers, and so they accepted the bag from my trembling hands and left the house without any fuss. The other poor wee lad in tow.
Ma,
said Lorcan.
What in God's name were you out doing?
I put both my hands on his shoulders and let out a deep sigh.
I don't know, son. I took a notion and I ran with it. Don't really know what I was thinking. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Ma.
A faint hue of regret came across his face.
I'm sorry for losing it earlier.
Ugh, that's all right, son. You know I'm only ever trying to look after you.
I know, Ma.
Lorcan paused for a minute, as though he was struggling to get something out.
You know, Ma, seeing your man here, young fella, well, it made me think about how lucky I am to have you, to be here for however long all this lasts. I love ye, Ma.
I got a wee lump in my throat then. I don't mind telling you. He's his da's son, our Lorcan.
Ach, son. You know I love you too. And I am very lucky to have a son like you.
Then Lorcan grimaced for a moment.
That poor lad's Ma. He's going to be in a lot of trouble with the amount of weed they said is in that bag.
My heart stopped for just a moment as I heard the police car pull out of the drive, the empty Speedy Eats bag in tow.
You know what? I think he'll be fine.
Why?
No reason. Here, fancy a fish supper?
We've been listening to Helen Wheels by Fionn Foley. Kerry Quinn played Helen. Lorcan was played by Killian Lenehan. James Murphy played Jimmy McConville. The young woman was played by Niamh McAllister and Gerard McCabe was Vincenzo. Both Niamh and Gerard played the police officers. Charlie Bonner was the older man. Other roles were played by members of the company. Sound design and sound supervision were by Damien Chanel. Helen Wheels by Fionn Foley was directed by Connell Morrison. The producer for RTE was Kevin Brew and the series producer of Drama on One is Kevin Reynolds. You can find Helen Wheels and the complete Drama on One archive on the website rte.ie/drama-on-one.
rte.ie/drama-on-one.